Give me a mic check for Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa, Florida.
Oh, hello, check one Tampa, check two Tampa. I need some more on one.
Okay.
Casino, check, check. Hard Rock, Tampa, check, check. Seminole Hard Rock.
Check it out for yourself at SeminoleHardRock.com. All right, guys, I'm rolling. Let's kick it.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred and Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Shortly, I will be chatting with Michael Monroe, former lead singer of Hanoi Rocks. And Michael's had a long solo career since. His brand new album is called I Live Too Fast to Die Young. It features our recent coolest song of the world, Can't Stop Falling Apart. Let's give it a listen now, and afterwards I'll be joined by Michael Monroe for your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. The Mighty Manfred with you here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and it's time for your coolest conversations. My guest is Michael Monroe, multi-instrumentalist, also the frontman in Hanoi Rocks, but he's been pursuing a solo career since the late 80s. His latest full-length is I Live Too Fast to Die Young, and it features this week's coolest song in the world, Can't Stop Falling Apart. Hey, Michael, how are you?
Hey, Manfred, I'm good. Hang on. Now, I've arrived. Hello.
Yes. God, you're sounding good. You sound good. Be careful. Don't blow your brains out, though. We got to keep
I've
you focused.
I've already done that. Been there, done that. How you doing, man?
I'm hanging in there pretty well overall. I know we've spoken several times, and I think the last time was like right before the pandemic, like the beginning of 2020, the end of 2019, somewhere around in there. What's your pandemic story? What's gone on since then, man?
Well, no big story. We've all been in the same boat. Couldn't play with my band for over 2 years because everybody lives all over the world. I mean, you know, Rich Jones lives in Canada. Steve Conte lives in Toronto. I mean, in New York. Rich in Toronto. And Carl Rockfish, the drummer, has moved to Spain now. So Sammy Alfa is the only one who lives in Finland, as I do. So we were not able to play, but we had a bunch of songs. I mean, last summer we had 34 songs to choose from for the album, and it's a good kind of problem to have. So, but I'm happy that we ended up with just 11. You always try to go for the 10 for the album. And then now we ended up with 11, so that's a good accomplishment. Yeah, you know, I didn't mind being in lockdown and, you know, having to stay home and sit on a couch and watch TV is better than having to go to war. What did they say in England? Our forefathers fought in two world wars, and you were being asked to stay home and sit on a couch. Don't worry, you can do this.
Like you were talking about 11 tracks on the album because you like to take it to 11, right? You're going to do more than just...
Oh, I never thought of that. Yeah.
Well, you can use it. I'm given that. That's a gift.
It's a power number. It's 11, 22, 33. I think their numerology, as much as I've heard, it's a power number.
So you mentioned all the songs that you had had to call through to decide which 11 were going to be on that. Were they all predated the pandemic, or were there any of that material just kind of was written during the pandemic?
during and before, there were all fighter was before, and Everybody's Nobody. I wrote Everybody's Nobody with Rich in the summer of 2019, mm-hmm. Before the pandemic. That we even demoed that in the summer as we were doing some shows in Finland in the festivals. But yeah, that was before the pandemic, and All Fighter and No Guilt. Actually, no, that was during. I remember I sent the chorus to Rich on a text message on the phone, and then mm-hmm. we worked on it, and I did a vocal on the demo at home and then sent it back to him. Yeah, that must have been a pandemic time. But yeah, most of them were around that time. And like I said, 34 songs last summer. And then we did get together to go into the studio. We demoed some of the songs in August last summer for about a week. We were in the studio for about a week and we recorded about 18 songs and really quickly, and that helped me decide what to leave out too. And by the time we got into the studio in November, beginning of November in Helsinki, Inkfish Studios, and by that time I was down to about 15, and I'm glad we got, well, there were two songs I thought, well, actually one that I thought was going to make this album for sure, left over from the last album, from One Man Gang. But mm-hmm. then after we were done recording, I decided that it didn't fit the album anymore, which is great, you know. And we tried a completely new studio also, as Erno Laitinen, the engineer, was a new guy I never worked with before. And I met him and I liked him. He mixed Sami Afo's solo album. And I know the owner of the studio from like the 70s already. And he was so we got together and I thought it would be good to try something completely new, and it paid off. It really had a great vision. It was more than an engineer, and we actually credited him with the band as the producers, because
I saw that, right? Erno,
yeah.
He likes to call himself Erno Error.
I guess so, yeah. I said, did the credits, he says Erno Error Lightning, I guess, because his name's Erno. Sounds almost like an error, but he's everything but an error. He had great ideas, and he had a lot of had a good vision, and he's a guitar player himself, and he's produced a band called Hello Helsinki, like Hello Helsinki, a Finnish band that's had probably the most hits in Finland of more than any other band in or artist in Finland. They're really good. They're a pop rock band, and he's been producing their records over the years, and then he's always wanted to do a rock album, and this was the perfect time for him to do such an endeavor to work with to make a rock record, and it was great to work with. He's really, really, we had a good chemistry and great connection, and a really, really great guy. It was a pleasure. So we recorded the basic tracks with Sammy and Steve and Rich, except Rich was. Rich had to stay. Rich was touring with the Professionals in UK before the recording, and he got the flu, of course, at the end of the tour.
Oh no!
And he couldn't get on a plane, so he missed the first three days. I think we started without him, but then when he came in, and the first week and a half, we recorded the basic tracks. Sammy and Carl left. Steve Conte stayed for about three more days, and then he left, and me and Rich stayed for the rest of the month. We lived in Helsinki in apartments for the rest of the month, and recorded the overdubs. And I think Steve sent some stuff over mm-hmm. From his home, but mostly it was just me, Rich, and Erno doing the rest of the you know.
Well, let me ask you something about Rich, because our coolest song in the world this week is Can't Stop Falling Apart. Did you write that with Rich?
Rich wrote that by himself. He okay. actually sent it. He sent it to the, we keep writing songs and sending them back and forth. And mm-hmm. I think it was one of the last ones he wrote before we were getting to a point where he said, okay, that's it. We're not going to write anymore. He sent that to everyone and said, you're probably going to hate this, but he just, you know, sent it to us. And we were like, whoa, we love it. This is great. It's like reminding me of the Top of the Pops kind of glam stomper, you know, Slade, right. Sweet, the Mud, you know, 70s kind of. The demo that he had also had like a tambourine in your face for the chorus. And it was like, But we tried it in the studio and didn't work out as well, since we had the whole band, didn't serve a purpose anymore there. But we all loved it, and I thought, oh no, this is great. And it is a different style of, I mean, I choose the songs based on the songs and not based on who wrote them. And I mean, last album was mostly Rich's songs, but this one I wrote some more on. And but you know, also the songs, so most of the songs are very different from what we've done before, style wise. Yeah. So and with Erno and with his with that studio and Erno engineering, and we had, I think the production, the sound, we renewed the band's sound in the best possible way, you know, song wise, production wise, arrangement wise, and sound wise. There's a lot more air and depth to it, and it's kind of, I guess, more pleasant to listen to, and a lot of dynamics and stuff.
I agree, a lot of dynamics. Specifically, though, about Can't Stop Falling Apart. Now, I've read that that song is an ode to the band's wives and loved ones. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah, it kind of is. Yeah, yeah, our wives and loved ones who stuck by our sides through the years of playing music and touring the world. And yeah, without them, we'd be screwed, I guess. And it also goes for anybody who's, you know, who has to work away from home for long periods of time, and you know, stay away from their loved ones. And it's always so nice to get back home.
You've been married since, with your current wife, since like 2003, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And before that, you were married, and I think your wife, she passed away fairly young.
She passed away, and she was a little older than me, but she passed away in 2001. Mm-hmm. And we've been married for 16 years, and she was American. She was from Baltimore. And
so June Wilder?
Jude Wilder, J-U-D-E, Jude Wilder.
Yeah.
And we wrote, you know, she had a lot of, she wrote poems and stuff and lyrics. So we wrote songs together. Actually wrote with Steven on the Demolition 23 album. She was with me writing lyrics on that one too. And we wrote a lot of stuff, and we were together for 16 years, and then she had a hemorrhage of the brain, and she died in 2001. And then I thought that was it. You know, you're lucky if you find one partner for life. I was never gonna get a second chance. And then luckily enough, I found Johanna, my current wife. And we've been, this summer it's gonna be 18 years, not 19 years. It's kind of almost 20 years we're gonna have been together. And lucky as I am, I found her, and I'm very happy. Her and we got two cats. Those are our kids. I don't have any kids.
What are the cats' names?
Nupu and Lumi, N-U-P-U. Nupu is one, and Lumi is the other one. Lumi means snow, because he was all white when he was a kitten. Yeah, Nupu and Lumi, and I love him more than life itself.
Oh, well, in the video for Can't Stop Falling Apart, there's a lot of smiling. It looks like downright laughing going on. And of course, I think that's great. I appreciate that. Was it really that much fun to make?
You know what? It was the day after we had played the first show live for over 2 years. We played a gig in Finland, that was in beginning of April, we toured, we had that was the first time we got together. So that was like the day after the first show we got to do, and we hadn't played for over 2 years. So we played on April 8th, and then the next day we shot the video, so that you can tell we're having a blast, because we're going like, yeah, you know, got to be together and have had a great time and all. Except then, the day after that, Sammy and Steve got COVID, and they got Corona, and we had to cancel 3 shows. For the following week, we had 3 more shows coming up, and we had to cancel those. But we did. Then the week after that, on the 21st, we had a gig in Helsinki at the Tavastia Club, which was fantastic. And one more show after that, so we got to play 3 shows. We got to play out of the 6 that were lined up. But on the video of Can't Stop Falling Apart, we're having a real good time. We're so happy to be together again. So you could tell from the video.
Well, so the lineup you mentioned, Sammy Jaffa, he's living there with you in Finland, in Helsinki, I guess.
Yeah, he lives in Helsinki. I live in Turku.
Okay. Right. And so he was with you in Hanoi Rocks, and also Steve Aconte living in New York. And of course, Steve is a favorite here in the Underground Garage with releases on Wicked Cool Records. Uh-huh. And we talked about those gentlemen before. Well, we haven't spoken. Let's talk a bit more about Rich, because he's written a lot of songs. And now he's Canadian. He was in this punk band, I think, called the Black Halos. How did you start working together with Rich?
Yeah, Rich was born in England. He was born somewhere. I forgot. It was not far from London. I forgot where it was. He was born in England, but he grew up in Toronto. And he's had other bands, Black Halos, and he's played with Ginger Wild Hearts, and Ginger's Wild Hearts sort of was his solo band and stuff. But he's an old mate, old friend. I've known him for many years, and he used to do, he did the artwork for our records for Horns and Halos album, for the Blackout States, but that's when he joined the band, and also for One Man Gang and the new album. And he's done merchandise, all the designs for merchandise and stuff as well. And he was sitting in for Dragon already from so many shows that it was all an easy, an obvious transition to have him in the band. And then after Blackout States, he, One Man Gang, he had so many great songs. I was like, okay, that one of mine is gone. Okay, I'm going to replace this. And it was like, really, he turned out to be a fantastic songwriter too. And then he's a hell of a nice guy, you know. And I made the decision when I restarted my solo career in 2010, actually 2009, me and Sammy hooked up. We met when the new New York Dolls were playing in Finland that summer. And I hooked up with Sam, you know, they invited me on stage to play some sax and harmonica and a couple of songs, Personality Crisis and stuff. And then we hung out till 4 a.m. with Sammy that night, and he said he would like to work with me again. And I was like, okay, well, I'm just starting my solo career again. And this is like almost half the band, you know. And we had Ginger Wildheart at the time. Ginger was in the band at first. And we found Carl Rockfist. Well, we had then Steve Conte, obviously the Dolls went on a hiatus. And
right.
Steve was perfect choice, because he's a fantastic player and he's a great songwriter too. And I encourage everyone to write, and I like to have a band environment. I'm being very fair to everyone. We're pretty much splitting everything fairly. And I like to collaborate with people. I made a couple of records where I play everything myself except for the drums, and I write everything myself, and I know what it's going to sound like. It's much more fun. And more, you get a better result working with other people. And like I said, we choose the best songs. I choose the best ones based on the songs and not on who writes them. And I encouraged everyone to write as much as possible, so you get the best result that way. Carl Rockfist, though, it was funny, because originally this band, we had Jimmy Clark, who played on its Demolition 23 album, was in Demolition 23. And in 2010, in January, when we started rehearsing the band after the 3 weeks, and we were doing this in LA, then Jimmy said the day before we were supposed to finish, and the tour's being booked and stuff, he said he can't commit to this 100%. And I said, well, oh wow, so thanks for telling me now, but it's okay. I love him, he's a great guy, and I understood why. But at the last minute, we had Carl Rockfist. Carl came to try through this other guitar player, recommended him, and we tried him out on three songs, and it worked out great. And as it turned out, he was born in Finland. Oh, wow. he'd been living in LA for 15 years with his wife and kids, and he grew up in Stockholm. His father is Finnish and his mother is Swedish, and he grew up in Stockholm, but he was born in Finland in a place called Karja. It's like an hour's drive from Helsinki. And what are the odds, you know? And
exactly. I want us to go back for a moment to you're talking about encouraging songwriting, and the album's got a great combination, a great balance of songs. And there's somewhere I read where you were saying that, you know, this the overall collection tells a great overall story. And on there, you've got songs titled, All Fighter, and the title cut, I Live Too Fast to Die Young. Our coolest song of the world is Can't Stop Falling Apart. You mentioned No Guilt. I'm just wondering how much of the new album is not just telling a great story, but telling the Michael Monroe story. I mean, how many of these songs really speak from your own experience? Because it is different songwriters, but you identify some aspect of that in yourself or not.
The way these guys write lyrics, I mean, even Steve and Rich, when they write lyrics, we know each other so well. We're such good buddies that they know, and they also think the same way about a lot of things, but it's like they're like inside my head a lot of the time. So, Everybody's Nobody. Oh shit! Sorry about that. Everybody's Nobody, for example. That started with an email I sent. We were corresponding with Rich and the guys about. There was this band that in London that used to be. It was like they were kind of. They came up in the 80s, and they were kind of influenced by Hanoi a bit, and they're, you know, big heroes in their own small circle now. And one of those cult kind of bands that were, I back in the day, I thought, you know, the London scene in the 80s was crazy. In like 83, 84, everybody, all of a sudden, everybody was doing smack, and I hated it. And it was easier to get than anything, and it was everywhere. And all these guys, all the London liggers and hangers-on were at these shows, and this band, still around, I won't mention names, but I said to Rich in the email that do this. Somebody suggested we do a show with them in London, and everyone thought it was cool. And I said, do they really pull a crowd, man? And Rich said, oh yeah, for sure. I said, okay, well let's do the gig. But then, you know, all the London liggers, all the hangers-on, everyone who's ever been nobody is going to be there that night, except maybe without the skag. And Rich, so Rich said, hey man, it sounds like a song in there. I said, yeah, everybody's nobody. I said, okay, yeah, let's write it. So that's kind of like a tongue-in-cheek tale about the, you know, letting go of the good old days and finding the things that make you happy here and now. Because a lot of artists in opposition seem to be, you know, content to bask in the glow of nostalgia instead of striving to move forward. So some people are stuck in it, and they never made it big, but then they say we never really wanted to be big. We're too cool to be big. Too cool to be famous.
We're going
to
take a
lucky shot.
Right, and we're going to take a listen to that, and I want to ask you go over that a little bit more with you. But first, I wanted to ask about the opening track, because you were like born like in 1962. Is that right? 62.
1962. Yeah, that's right.
62. So you were like only or about seven by the Summer of Love, and the album opens up with this really driving rocking number called Murder the Summer of Love. What significance does a Summer of Love have to you?
You mean that I had to be there to talk about it?
Well, no, but
I know what you're saying. It has the significance that, well, first of all, I think this may have inspired Rich for this Altamont thing. Was when we wrote Nothing's All Right with Little Steven.
Yeah.
Originally, that Steven had an idea for a song. The chorus was, it was going to be called 60s Baby. And of course, you're a 60s baby, born in the age of Aquarius. And I thought, no, it should be something more. So I figured, I'm born in the age of Altamont. So how about that? That's more realistic. That's when the reality hit and the whole hippie love, peace and love movement, was destroyed because of the harsh reality of the Altamont event. And that was the end of the love period, was peace and love and all that. And born in the age of Altamont. And I suggested we write all the lyrics and Nothing's All Right, right? All the verses are about different decades. So it's about the 60s, baby, with the 60s, and then the 70s and the 80s. 80s was of course, the one in the age of take what you can get. And anyway, so that might have been a spark for this song, but Murder the Summer of Love, it's not, obviously there's references to Altamont, but it's more broad than that. It's about being in the present moment and appreciating good things that are happening now. Because people often tend to tear things down in the name of progress, only to look back at them nostalgically, wishing that we had those people and those places and moments again. So what the song is saying is like, get up off your ass and live life to the fullest in the here and now. This moment determines the past and the future and the present. So that's the message of that song. But obviously there's references to Altamont. Many kids probably these days, who knows, a lot of kids don't even know what that Altamont, the whole event, and don't even know about it. But it's there's references, for example, the stupid had a gun, but they blamed the 81, obviously 81 at Hell's Angels. Stupid had a gun. That line is also about the thought behind it was the Deep Purple song was Smoking and Water. Some stupid with a flare gun, burn the place to the ground. So that's like a little inside thing there. Stupid had a gun, but they blamed the 81. But yeah, that's really about living in the moment. And I personally think the hippie movement, that time was probably the closest that will ever come to people having the power, because it was in the name of peace and love. And the government didn't know how to crush the revolution, because it was they couldn't do it with violence, because these hippies, they were just saying, okay, have a flower. And so that was like probably the closest. They were probably freaking out for a while until they came up with a scheme to put out some bad acid or something. So they started freaking out, had bad trips, and like, oh.
So you mentioned in the song about never trusting a hippie. But that's tongue-in-cheek or not? Or do you have any firsthand reasons not to trust a hippie?
No, that's tongue-in-cheek. That's have you ever seen the Sex Pistols movie? Brave Rock and Roll Swindle?
No, I have. Just, you know, I've seen like the opening bit.
I think it was Malcolm, was it the, somebody says this, never trust a hippie. It was, Malcolm McLaren said that, yeah, never trust a hippie. And I think that was a great line. It's just, it's a saying, you know. So, but I'm, like I just said what I thought about the movement. I thought it was probably the best kind of revolution that you can have, because it's in the name of love and peace. And that's just, love is the strongest vibration in the universe, I believe. So the government were freaking out for a while. Then these people grew older and they became yuppies. You know, we were just out of it. We were on drugs and never mind the revolution. You know, so right. That's how they managed to kill it. But yeah, I never trust a hippie and never trust anybody.
Well, today is Friday, June the 24th. You've been doing a lot of shows this month throughout Europe. And I think tomorrow you're playing Hellfest in France. Have you ever played Hellfest before?
No, I've never played Hellfest, and I certainly hope and think it's not going to be hell. It's funny how this place is always his name is like hell, you know, hard rock hell and Hellfest. You know?
Well, I was going to say it like Hellfest, but
yeah, Hellfest. Yeah, I don't know why they always name these things like supposed to be so cool. All this death and hell and devil and all that stuff, but it's all in fun, I'm sure. But I mean, I dig Jesus's style, you know, I'm on the light side. So, but I'm aware of all the darkness, and it's way too much of it in the world already anyway. So I always laugh at that stuff. And, you know, I mean, if you look at Black Sabbath, that started the whole heavy metal thing, their lyrics weren't really devil or Satan or anything like that. They sang about Satan, but they sang about mainly about God and the love. God is the only way to love and love and light. And when you look at the lyrics, Master of Reality, they were really singing about God is the only way to love, After Forever, that song, for example. I read these lyrics as a kid and I translated. That's how I started learning English. And this is all about love and God. It's not about the Satan and devil. And Ozzy Osbourne always showed the peace sign, never this devil horns or whatever that's supposed to be. And it just makes me laugh when some parents come with their kids and say, okay, take a photo with Michael and show some attitude. And then they show the horns, you know, it's like, that's not all the attitude. It's just crap. It's like, that's like, you know, don't teach them that, you know, I show the peace sign, love and peace. How about that? So, but yeah, I mean, devil and hell and all that, but Hellfest, I'm sure it's not going to be hell. I'm going to rock like hell. But,
yeah, there you go. Right. Well, the one thing, Michael, one thing I did not see on this tour itinerary, all these dates through Europe, were any U.S. shows. When are we going to see you here stateside?
Well, if I had my way, I would be there tomorrow, but it's not so easy.
Yeah.
We toured there. We did a few club tours in like 2013, for example. And
yeah.
If you're playing clubs there, you're playing to a few hundred people, and at night it's like you'll never get anywhere. I mean, you could do that for the rest of your life, and you really need to have a big stadium tour with some big band for a year or two to get noticed. So in my position, it's just, you know, it's not cost effective. You just lose a lot of money, and you end up in debt, and you don't get anywhere really. unless you have like a real big tour and big visibility. And at this point, we came to the conclusion at one point that, you know, it's no point beating our head against the wall at unless somebody says, hey, join us on tour, or somebody who plays like big, you know, arenas or, you know, bigger places, because it's such a big country, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to, you know, it's hard for a band like ours to go anywhere to get. It doesn't make any sense, and that's unfortunately that's the case. And with rock and roll not being as popular as, or it's pretty much like it's all mostly about rap and country, hip hop and country, and you know, all that stuff happening. And so it's, I mean, I've heard it's pretty hard for even big rock bands, like, you know, big names are doing like combined tours together, because you know, rock and roll is not so fashionable anymore. I've always been anti-fashion anyway. But in any case, it's unfortunately it's a situation. And you know, you get a tour bus, it'll be like, you know, you're hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. So unfortunately, it's right in this situation right now. We're doing we were supposed to do the Monsters of Rock cruise. We did that once, and we were supposed to do it this year, but then because of the COVID situation, we didn't.
Right.
And then I think we're supposed to do it next year, but that's the only show I know that's like even near, you know, in the States. But yeah, right now, unfortunately, I would love to play there, because I know that rock and roll is a tradition in America. It's like, or it's part of the history. Taught in school books, or if it's not, it should be, you know, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, it started it all, and all that stuff is like part of the history there, and people really appreciate good rock and roll with two guitars like we have, and you know, Stones and Aerosmith and all that. That's
well, I like the idea of you coming to do the Monsters of Rock thing, and then who knows, maybe you guys can just do like a club date or something hooked into that, you know.
Oh yeah, I mean, LA and New York, New York and LA is always great, and maybe, you know, Philly and Boston LA, New York is always great, and LA, we played the Whiskey every time we've been there. We play two nights at the Whiskey normally, and New York also is, it's always great, but it's all the space in between. The Midwest and all that, there's great audiences there, but you know, all you get to play is clubs, and you know, you could do that forever and not go nowhere slow, you know.
Well, you know, we can take a listen to one more cut off the album, and I'd like us to hear Everybody's Nobody, and you were talking about that a few moments ago.
Yeah, I actually, talking about the stadiums, we're opening for Guns N' Roses on July 1st and 2nd in London at the Stadium. That's a cool thing to do in England, in London. But yeah,
right. Well, you got to get those guys doing a tour stateside, and then you can hook up with that, and problem solved.
Say the word and I'm there, you know. If it's up to me, I'd do it.
Well, give me a Slash's number and I'll get on the horn. I'll crack the whip.
Unfortunately, I cannot do that, but Slash does actually. He plays a solo on the title track on the album, Live Too Fast to Die Young. And you asked about the I just wanted to say about the entirety of the album as a whole. When I did the track listing for the album, there's one thing I noticed was the first song of the album was called Murder, the Summer of Love.
Right.
Then the last, second to last song is I Live Too Fast to Die Young. And the last song is Dearly Departed. So like the references to death in a positive way, not about killing somebody. It's just, you know, Murder, the Summer of Love. It's about killing an ideal. And Live for the Fast to Die Young is a positive statement, reinventing an old cliche, you know, Live Fast to Die Young. So I Live Too Fast to Die Young, perfect title for me. And Dearly Departed, so that was like, okay, this is the beginning and the end with the death theme in a positive way. To me, it just was a sign from the guides or angels or whatever that this is now all, everything's in the right place. The whole entirety is, I made it, the track listing is right. And mind you, Dearly Departed, I wrote that in 2001. I wrote the lyrics when Judy, my late wife, when she passed away, she actually, it was her title. It was the last title she gave me, because I was trying to, she was not feeling well. And I tried to cheer her up, and I said, let's write something, you know, what, do you have any titles? And she said, how about this, Dearly Departed? And then I started writing a song, and then she passed away, and then I wrote the lyrics about her, and the song is really, I thought it was too sad and personal to record before that, before mm-hmm. this, and just last few months before the album, I started thinking that it's a touching, it's a moving song, it's a really, really a personal, it's a, and I had this, I rearranged it. It had a bridge. It had a B verse that I took out, and it worked better that way. And Sammy then had an idea. He used to hang out with me and Judy in New York. You know, we spent many a night, you know, having heavy, cool conversations and stuff. And he had this approach, the musical approach that's on the song now, that not having the whole band and this kind of, as you can hear, the music is really eerie. The atmosphere is very haunting and yes. Totally different, and it takes you to a different place. And that's when Sammy sent me the demo of the music like that. I did vocal. I said, that's it. That's the last song of the album for sure. Steve thought it was too sad. I said, it's supposed to be sad. Life is sad sometimes. And yes. It's about losing someone near and dear. And it's about losing someone near and dear and to you and having to readjust your life to the situation.
I agree. No, it's a good way, a strong.
Which unfortunately most of us go through at one point or another in life. And song, if you ask about how I personally feel about the lyrics, no guilt. I had that chorus, and those lyrics are about this. Those lyrics were written during the summer riots in the U.S. in the aftermath of the George Floyd murder. It's about crooked cops. It's about how the whole system is crooked and set up to help these scumbags to get away with murder time and time again. That's what that song is about. So everything I sing is I can relate to. Pagan Prayer is the only song that ended up in the album that's written by Steve Conte. And that's the only song that has references to the pandemic. There's your neighbors get no vaccinations, believe the earth is flat. Right. You get an eternal vacation if you believe in that. So that was like, but that's a killer song. It's also kind of like The Damned, inspired by The Damned, Anti-Pope, you know, your Anti-Pope. And they had a song called Anti-Pope from the Machine Gun Etiquette album. That definitely The Damned inspired. Anti-Socialite, that lyrics, that was, Rich had that, and sent it, it's just kind of like Alice Cooper-ish. He was saying, he thought of like The Ballad of Dwight Frye, Second Coming, you know, the Alice Cooper stuff. And I love the lyrics. I thought, that's me. That's totally me. Mm-hmm. No matter what, I said, we're going to make this work. And there's a danger of that becoming corny and power ballad, kind of pompous easily if you start going that way, you know, big drums and dung, dung, dung. I said, no, we're not going to do that. Keep it small and personal. And we used, as a reference, we used John Lennon, Imagine, the production.
Oh, just
keep
okay.
it small
yeah.
and simple.
Yeah.
I had done like a demo piano for it myself, and I'd done the vocals. The first vocal I sang in a studio because I thought it was the most demanding. But then we had this guy, Lenny Taipale, who was a Finnish brilliant piano player, one of the best in the world, and a dear friend of mine. He came to play the piano over, and mm-hmm. then I had this private event gig the night before near Turku, where I live. So it was so late that I only slept like 2.5 hours the night before. I got to the studio in the morning. I says, I really want to try the vocal again. And Rich and Erno were saying like, oh man, it's great. The vocal's great already. I says, no, yeah, I know, but I know I can do better. So with a tired voice, I did one take, and I was like, hey man, sounds great. I says, thank you. Okay. So I told you, I re-sang the whole song with the, as tired as I was, I re-sang the whole vocal. I redid the, that's on the album now. Sometimes the sleep deprivation.
Yeah. You know that story, there's I can't think of which Beatles song it is, but the story is that Paul McCartney wanted his voice to sound tired. And so he made a point to come in the first thing each morning, when his voice was sort of, you know, when he was just kind of waking up, so they would have that quality to it, right? So
yeah,
in your case, it ties right into the character of the song. So yeah, absolutely.
That's right. And as you said about songs that are about, well, All Fighter, that's about fighting boredom, fighting normalcy, fighting against what you're told and you're supposed to do. It's about letting yourself be yourself, no apologies, no regrets, and that's me totally. Young Drunks and Old Alcoholics. It's about how the young bands are encouraged to party and get screwed up, and before you know, they end up as drug addicts and alcoholics, and the industry loves a good train wreck until it becomes a serious problem, and then suddenly you're on, nobody finds it funny anymore, and you're on your own. So it's basically saying you can't live like this forever, so get your shit together. So that I can relate to totally. That's about my, you know, I'm right, keeping my head on. And Derelict Palace is also about someone who's a little bit too much into drugs, and before you know, they kind of disappear from all the people and things that they used to love. But that is one of my favorites. I mean, it's very Lords of the New Church. The musical world is the sound and the air and the air can has there. That's one of my absolute favorites, because it really reminds me of my dear friend Steve Bader's, and he was big influence on me. The Lords of the New Church, kind of that definitely is one of my favorites. Nice sound world and everything.
Let me ask you again about Everybody's Nobody, because there's that line that too cool to be famous because you missed your lucky shot. Your overqualified superior status has left you here to rot.
Yes.
Now, was that Rich that wrote that line, or did you write that line?
No, I wrote those.
That's a great line.
Thank you. Yeah. I wrote that line. Yeah, that's about,
well, you know, I about that song you were talking about earlier, I still, you know, there is a positive bent to it. I mean, there's a, you know, about the character whose glory days are kind of behind them, and you explained about this band, the English band, but still there's this aspect where later on the line is there, they're all coming out tonight, everyone who's ever been nobody, and we'll all set the world to right, everyone that's ever been nobody, and nobody's going to be somebody tonight. I mean, I don't know, it's there. I think there's a positive thing to that, you know.
Everybody's always going on about, I'm going to be somebody. Well, this is saying everybody's, nobody's going to be somebody tonight, but then also it says, it's about, it can be taken as a positive statement about people, because everybody, at least everybody's, for about your self-esteem, everybody's at least been a nobody sometimes. So that's something. That's already an accomplishment right there. And, well, it says in the end, what you don't look back when your future is bright and I don't see your name in lights. It was, at first, I sang the song a little sarcastically and a little too snide. And I started thinking, I was talking to Aaron, and I says, it's actually pretty sad. So it's not like, I don't want to be so sarcastic or so cynical with the with the singing, the attitude about singing. So I sang it over, and I changed my attitude a little bit. It was more like a little bit sad, acknowledging the facts in a more like it's not so so snide and so cynical. So it's a little bit sad, but it's also positive in the end, and it has. As you can, the video, you'll see also the expressions are, it leaves a positive vibe. And your overqualified superior status. I remember when Rich saw the line when I'd written the lyrics, he said, I was wondering how you're going to sing that line, because it's such a long line. Because too cool to be famous because you missed your lucky shot. Then you're overqualified superior status. So I said, I'm going to sing like this. You're overqualified superior status. Oh, okay. I left you here to rot. So you're overqualified. You're there to, you're rotting in your. But yeah, it's acknowledging the facts, and then goodbye Piccadilly, so long Leicester Square, leaving London, and then leaving New York, so long to the, goodbye to the Bowery, so long to Times Square. Time's there moving on, but you ain't going anywhere. So it's a positive, in the end, it's positive. It's not, and it's like not mocking these people, it's kind of acknowledging the facts, and you know, I like to move on and live in the present times and try to make albums is the best I can, and always get better. There's always room for improvement. You're never too good. You're never good enough. There's always room for improvement, which is great, because it would be boring if you all of a sudden woke up one day and said, okay, I don't have to try anymore. I always try to do better and give 100,000% with everything I do. I live too fast to die young is a perfect statement, because the song is also about keeping your head straight, head on straight, and not sort of falling for the trappings of fame, succumbing to the pitfalls that end a lot of artists' careers before they even get started, really. But
exactly. And Michael, that's I think that's a great summation for our coolest conversations, right? And I need to thank you again for taking the time to chat with me today.
Great to talk to you too, man. Thanks. We had a lot of.
All right. We're going to take a listen now to Everybody's Nobody. It's Michael Monroe off the new solo album, I Live Too Fast to Die Young. here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Everybody's nobody. It's Michael Monroe here in Little Steven's Underground Garage of his brand new solo album, I Live Too Fast to Die Young. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Michael for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Legendary Boston band Nervous Eaters, they've got a new single out now on Wicked Cool Records called Wild Eyes, and their current bass player, Brad Helene, will tell us all about it on our next Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. And they're all coming out tonight. Everyone who's ever been nobody.
There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.